Hello, and welcome to the Empowerography Podcast. This is a platform created for women's voices to be heard and a place to share their stories, journeys, and successes with the world for the purpose of helping other women who might be on similar journeys. We are empowering women one episode at a time. I'm your host, Brad Walsh, so kick back, grab one of your favorite beverages, and enjoy the stories. The world needs to hear your message and your story, so don't deny the world of that gift within you that the universe has given you. Someone out there needs to hear your story because it will support them in feeling hope, inspired, and even transformed. Do you want to discover how I help get my clients out of their own way, show up, and confidently share their message? I would love to extend an invitation to you to join me in my free masterclass, Start Your Own Podcast from Idea to Implementation, on Wednesday, April 5th at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can find the registry link in the show notes. Hope to see you there. Hello there, Brad Walsh here, your host of the Empowerography Podcast. Today, my guest is Colleen Jorgensen. She is a manual osteopath, an athletic therapist, pain care aware educator and lead trainer, that's a mouthful, a therapeutic Pilates, yoga, and somatic teacher. Welcome, Colleen. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Brad? Thanks so much for having me on.
Did I get it out all right?
It is not a catchy title. You did very well.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for taking and making the time to be here with me today and share a little bit about your story and your journey. I'm very excited to have you here. So
I'm honored. Thank you for having me.
With that being said, let us jump in and get started.
Let's do it.
As I said, that is a tongue twister of titles and it's a hell of a lot of hats and quite an extensive resume. And it would seem that all of these things, the hats, the titles, they're tied very closely together. There's a common thread through them. I'm exhausted just reading through it all. How do you find the time for all of this? And how do you prioritize? And how important is prioritization and organization to you?
Very, but I'm kind of all or nothing kind of person. So I'm either super organized and I have a lot of organizational tools in place. And when I use them, they have great value. And then I'll find myself trying to do something on a deadline and all of a sudden I'm not using my tools. And it confirms every time that it's better when you use your tools. But I'm a little bit of that one extreme or the other. And all the hats, like you say, it sounds like it's all different professions. And I guess they could be each a profession on their own, but they really do all complement each other. It's all about working with people. It's all about working with people who have bodies that move. And I just find the body so fascinating. And, you know, we will never know all there is to know about the human body. So there's always more to learn. So if I'm not trying to learn more, I feel like I'm behind. So I just love to learn. I constantly like to keep updating what I know.
Love it. And now I'm very curious, with all the hats that you wear, what does your morning routine look like?
I love this question, actually, because I've never considered myself a morning person, but with certain health challenges that I've been dealing with in the last decade or so, I was finding myself really dreading the mornings. And I even started to hear myself say things like, I hate the mornings. I really dread the mornings. And then that's not me. I'm one of those sickeningly optimistic people, you know, annoyingly optimistic.
I love those people.
That I always see the glass half full. And I heard myself and I'm like, okay, enough. If you're going to complain about it, if you don't like mornings, let's switch them up. Yeah. So I actually did implement a routine about 2 years ago. So now one of the biggest things is getting sunlight right away. So depending on the weather, I'm in Montreal and we had freezing rain overnight. So it's a skating rink outside. So if I can't be outside in the garden, we have a solarium. So I love to just get that direct sunlight. With that, I have my homemade tea. It's a turmeric ginger lemon tea. And I do some vagal tone practices, usually gua sha. Okay. And gua sha is traditionally like a facial massage, but I really do it more for a nervous system resiliency perspective. And then the last two things, I've had to learn that this body, dealing with the issues I'm dealing with these days, doesn't like to do big movement in the morning. So I do like micro movements. So as I'm having my tea and doing the vagal tone, I'm doing these little micro movements of the spine and the different joints. And then sometimes I will journal. That's not an everyday thing, though.
What drives, motivates, and inspires you to keep going and excelling at all that you do?
I have a very curious mind. I'm someone who does love to learn, and not just to get better at what I do professionally. If there's something that I don't know about, I want to learn about it. Doesn't matter what it is. So curiosity is a big part of it. And I just find the human body is so magnificently complex that it just keeps me coming back for more. The more I learn, the more you realize you don't know,
yeah,
and the more I want to know.
Now, can you share with us what you were doing for a living before making the jump into entrepreneurship? And what was the catalyst for you stepping into the entrepreneurial world?
Yeah, it was kind of neat, actually. So I was an athletic therapist working mm-hmm. in a sports medicine clinic.
Okay.
And I was a Pilates instructor. At the time, this was back in 1996 or 97, there was only one Pilates studio in Montreal. So it wasn't mainstream like it is now. So the clinic that I was working for, they were wanting to expand and they wanted to bring in a multidisciplinary team. So I went to them with a business proposal and I suggested, why don't you bring in some Pilates equipment and make it like a rehab Pilates area? And they were interested, but literally had never heard of it before and were kind of hesitant. So they weren't sure. So I went to my business plan and I said, I think that I can do this. So I went back to them and I said, look, what if I purchase the equipment and I rent a little corner of the clinic to run that business from you? And they said, yes. So at the time, I think it was about $5,000, which being a fresh graduate out of university was huge.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was the best decision I ever made. And, you know, I thought that I would have to look into marketing because nobody knew what Pilates was. So how am I going to get people here? But what happened was because I was still working for the clinic as an athletic therapist, but I was new, so I wasn't full yet.
Yeah.
So anytime I had a break, I would jump on the reformer and I would just do a workout. And if you've ever seen Pilates, it looks really interesting. It looks intriguing. So people started to ask. I also gave a free session to every staff member, every
right.
doctor, osteopath, physio. And the patients started to say, oh, would that be good for my rehab? And then it just sort of moved organically. And then after about 3 years, I think there, I took the equipment and I opened my own space where I did osteopathy and Pilates out of the same space.
Awesome. How long have you been working in this field overall?
28 years, which
28
is crazy
years.
Because
wow.
I feel like I'm 35, but obviously when
thing.
You hear that number, I'm not.
28 That's a good years. Thing. Why is this mission of helping people manage their pain so personally important to you?
Yeah. So I've been working with people in pain since 96, but in 2010, I had a spinal cord compression injury. And it really was life-changing. And for a period of a couple of years, there were weeks at a time where the only thing I could move were my hands and forearms. So I lived on my floor. I couldn't even move my head. So I could just look at the ceiling.
Holy
and that was it.
Shit.
And as awful as it was, and I'll just share because it...
Yeah.
So a couple of years ago, I broke 5 bones in my foot. It was painful. It was quite painful, but there was like a beginning and an end to that pain. Do you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. the rest of me was still okay, even though that hurt quite a bit. And even I had my first spine surgery on my 22nd birthday with
wow.
5 years of chronic pain before that. And even though that pain was terrible, I had
Sorry,
back.
Did you say 22?
22, yes.
5 years of pain? You had your
5
first surgery
yep.
5 years before that?
I started the pain at 17 and
Holy
finally had surgery at 22.
Shit.
So it was 5 years of back pain with nerve pain down both legs. So like those pains are challenging, but mm-hmm. still there was a beginning and an end to them. And there were parts of me that were still okay. And then in 2010, when I had this spinal cord compression, I still in all these years have not found the words to properly describe it. But it was like now it was like the very essence of who I am at my core was being invaded by something foreign. So it touched every single ounce of me. There was no beginning and end to it. And even though that was so horrible and the pain I can only describe as inhuman, I didn't have fear because I understood what was happening. And I understood what was happening because I've been studying the body my whole life.
Yeah.
But it hit me about 6 weeks into the first episode of that most people don't have any idea how their bodies work. And when they're in pain, they don't know the why. And because they don't know the why, fear takes over and you're afraid to try anything because you're worried you're going to make it worse.
Yeah.
So you're kind of paralyzed until you get permission from an expert of what you should or should not do. And it hit me in that moment. Well, sometimes, especially where I live, it can be months and months before you see a specialist. So many people don't move forward in those months because they're afraid to do the wrong thing. So I decided in that moment, I need to build something that teaches people, first of all, how does your body work? And then second of all, how can you work with your body so that you can help yourself if you have an injury or pain? So I started to formulate it in my mind, but it took another 7 or 8 years before my health was to the place that I could actually sit at a computer and create the thing that I had been building in my mind. So for those 7 to 8 years, I really did a deep dive. Every time I read something, if it referenced a person or a method or an exercise that I had not heard of, I then bought that book or I took that course. And I just kept doing that because there is no one thing that helps pain. You really have to have this multidisciplinary approach to it. And that's what I did. I spent those 8 years gathering as much information as I could, using myself as a guinea pig, of course. Yeah. And then finally in 2019 or 2020, I launched my 12-week online pain care program, Dare to Heal. And I'm so thrilled with what it is.
Amazing. Wow. 17 that started for you. 17. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it was a little crazy.
So pain can be a very complex and subjective experience. How do you define pain and what factors contribute to its manifestation and persistence?
It's a great question. So I'm someone who hates labels. So I don't actually like to define pain, but I will share, and I'm paraphrasing, so I might get a word or two wrong, but the International Association for the Study of Pain has a definition, something like pain is a sensory and emotional experience that is connected with real or perceived tissue damage. So while that is factually correct, it does not resonate with me at all as a person who lives with pain. To me, pain is whatever you living with pain describes your experience to be, because it's so individual. It truly is so individual. Having said that, what we do know now that's newer information is that pain and damage are not the same thing. Pain does not mean that there's damage in your tissue. Pain is more about protection. And understanding that is a huge part of getting to the other side of pain. So when you say, so what holds us in that pain cycle? If pain persists past the point where tissues have healed, so most injuries, regardless of what the injury is, most tissues heal by 6 to 12 weeks.
Right.
For some people, as the tissue heals, the pain goes down. For others, as the tissue heals, the pain stays at the same level. And for some, tissues heal, but the pain actually gets worse. So how does that make any sense? If the tissues have healed, why is the pain getting worse? And we understand that has more to do with the nervous system and how the nervous system is interpreting the messages that are coming into your body and from the environment. And what happens when pain has persisted for a while, one, neuroplasticity, which can work for us or against us, our brain gets better and better at what it does often. So the longer you've had pain, the better your system gets at producing more pain. Now, the good news to that is that it's plastic, so we can train the brain to stop producing pain. And that's a big part of getting through chronic pain. The second thing is the protective mechanisms. So we're really lucky that we have this nervous system that takes its job of protecting us super seriously. It really wants to protect us well. And it does that through a lot of different protective mechanisms. Things like pain, muscle tension, muscle guarding, joints giving way, muscle weakness, feelings of anxiety, depression, inflammation, among other things. And those things are wonderful if you've done something like maybe you just tweaked your knee, but you're late for the train. So you go to run for the train, but your knee buckles and you can't put your weight on it. That is our incredible system saying, whoa, you shouldn't be putting weight on it right now. So I'm going to do something that makes you pause and take a little rest. Fantastic. But the problem is when pain has persisted, we don't need that protection anymore, but the system thinks we do. So it keeps giving us these protective responses that make us kind of afraid to move. Yeah. And then it becomes a vicious cycle.
Now, the mind-body connection, of course, as we're just talking about, plays a significant role in pain perception.
Yep.
Can you explain the connection between emotional well-being, stress, and pain, and any strategies for managing these factors to promote pain resolution?
It's so huge. It's not a little piece. It's a really big piece. So with functional MRI, we've been able to show, I'm doing that research, they have been able to show that when you have a physical feeling of pain, the emotional centers of the brain light up, which tells us that when you have a painful sensation, there is an emotion attached to it. Now, does that mean that every pain experience is driven from an emotional source? I don't think so. I think that comes down again to the individual. For some people, absolutely, there's an emotional thing that's the trigger. For some, it may not be the source, but if we can figure out what emotion or emotions are connected to the pain or to something associated with the pain, that gives us one more doorway into the solution, because there is no one magic bullet when it comes to pain. Everyone out there who has pain is desperate to find that magic bullet. It does not exist. If it did, there would not be 1 in 4 people in the world living with chronic pain.
Yeah.
But what we know to be the most successful right now, and it could change because we're always learning, But right now, what we understand is trying to access the system from as many doorways in as possible. So things like breath, mindfulness, awareness, movement that feels good, self-talk, how you're talking to yourself about pain, how others are talking to you about your pain, your sleep, your nutrition, everything that makes you is going to contribute to whether you continue feeling pain or not. So we need to not get too tunnel visioned with somebody's symptoms, which is very easy to do, especially the person in pain. They want you to put your hands where the pain is. But the tricky thing is that almost always where you feel your pain is not the source of the pain. So we have to be able to say, okay, as much as yes, let's go ahead and touch that part, we also have to address all the other factors that are influencing it. And all the other factors are everything that it makes you, everything you do, think, say, the people in your life, the environments you're in, it all is going to affect your pain. So we have to try to address all of those different factors.
That's a hell of a lot. It's a lot of moving pieces.
It is. And that can sound overwhelming, but at the same time, what I find exciting is that a lot of the things that will address those different factors are quick and easy. Okay. So it's not like you have to do an hour on this and an hour on that and an hour on this. A lot of it is truly like 30 seconds to 2 minutes, and you've addressed maybe three of them all in one shot. Right. I find that actually really encouraging and very empowering for people.
Yeah, for sure. As we know, Western medicine or traditional medicine, medical approach often, of course, relies on medication and invasive procedures to help treat the pain. What alternative or complementary therapies do you suggest to patients seeking non-pharmacological interventions for their pain relief?
So I'm biased. As an osteopath, I do strongly believe that osteopathy is great for chronic pain. I don't know how I would have gotten through it without my osteopaths. And one of the reasons why osteopathy is so good for chronic pain is because it takes a mind-body holistic approach where you're really looking at how all the systems interact and affect each other. Having said that, osteopathy is not the be-all end-all. I again think it comes down a lot to the person and what they need, but it also comes down to the person that you're seeking treatment from. So maybe osteopathy is good for you, but I might not be the right osteopath for you. You know, if you come to me and I do all the right techniques, but my personality rubs you the wrong way, it's probably not going to be very successful. So in my case, as an osteopath, I have a multidisciplinary team that don't work with me, but I refer out to these people. And when I don't just do it based on the profession, I also do it based on personality and kind of the energy of the people to make sure that I'm matching people up that are going to gel. And I don't think there's anything that's off the table. There are so many beautiful professions out there that have a lot of value. Acupuncture, massage, physio, athletic therapy, osteo, like there's so many, but it's so individual, and this is not easy for people to hear. It can take a lot of trial and error to figure out, well, what is the right combination for me in this moment? And that changes from one person to the next. What I will say to anyone out there listening who's in pain is you can't just give it one treatment and decide that is for me or that isn't. It's just, again, there's no magic bullet, and one treatment, you can't gauge it. Right. So I would say that unless it's a personality thing where that person is not for you, I wouldn't judge a method. If you're in chronic pain, I feel you have to give it at least 5 sessions before you know if it's going to be helpful or not.
Yeah, the personality thing, you'll know right away. First session, that could be decided
for sure. Yes.
Pain, of course, is not limited to physical injuries or medical conditions. It also manifests in the body from unresolved trauma, emotional distress. How do you assist patients in identifying and addressing these underlying issues to promote long-term pain resolution?
Yeah, and that's an important piece, and it can be complicated. Well, yes and no. I guess it all depends. Okay, so one thing first is that studies do show that people who have a history of trauma or challenging emotional beginnings in life, they tend to be more prone to developing chronic pain. And there are many reasons for this, but one of the reasons we think is because if you've had that high stress situation early in life, then your nervous system had to go on high alert. It had to often go into that stress response to allow you to survive. Yeah. And that was a really good thing for you to get through what you had to get through. But now the system has become really great at protecting you. So now you get an injury. So there's a little bit more threat to the system. And now because your system has already had so much threat in its life, it overreacts to that threat. So it's a little bit like what we talked about before. Yes, I'm still going to address the symptoms that person has and whatever we need to do on the physical body itself, but yeah, we also need to find the connections, like you said. So for example, if I'm working one-on-one with someone, it will happen often that I'm working on an area and they'll start crying, or they'll have a memory that makes them angry or frustrated or sad. And first, I just try to create a safe space because I'm not a psychologist, right? But I try to create a safe place where they feel like they've got a container where they're able to explore it. And we try to do that. I try to help them figure out how might these two things be connected. So either when you feel those feelings or these thoughts, where does that manifest in your physical body? Or when working on a certain area or moving a certain area or in a certain posture, what thoughts and emotions bubble up? And what it does is it helps people to sort of put more pieces of the puzzle together, you know? And the more pieces of the puzzle the person has, again, the more empowered they are to figure it out, to figure out that solution that works for them.
Love it. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Many individuals that suffer with chronic pain, they have feelings of frustration, of course, and hopelessness and isolation. It's a lot to deal with. How do you approach the emotional and psychological aspect of pain in your practice, and what techniques do you use to support your patients in developing a positive mindset?
I'm really glad that you're talking about that, because the feelings are challenging, and there's also feelings of grief and a loss of identity. You know, you sort of all of a sudden you find yourself maybe not able to perform in the profession you've done your whole life, maybe not able to do your role in the family that's typically yours. Maybe you can't get out socially or do the things, the sports or activities that you like to do. So that identity crisis is really challenging. So first of all, recognizing, you know, we have to name it. There's an acceptance piece that is really challenging, but really key. And I had to come to this place myself, because for me, for sure, there was a huge identity crisis. I'm such a mover. I've always have been. I mean, you can see.
Yes.
I can't
Very
talk
expressive.
About, you know, and if I'm standing, I'm moving my whole body, not just my hands. So when I couldn't move, I didn't know who I was. But then you start to realize, well, actually, I'm a lot of things over and above that one thing I do for sport or for play or for creativity or whatever it is. So there's a little bit of that. So partly it's acknowledging, recognizing, naming, and accepting. And I have to preface that accepting doesn't mean that you accept that this is the way you're going to be for the rest of your life.
Right.
Acceptance means you're acknowledging that this is where you are right now. It doesn't mean you stop trying, and it doesn't mean that things won't change. So that's a big piece. And then it was part of my program, and it was interesting to see how some people reacted to it. And I really thought about it before doing this, but in my pain program, I would send them an email every day. And at the end of the email, I sign off with "seek joy." And I knew when I was doing it, I thought, is that going to come off as really insensitive? Because I know that everybody in this program is struggling. And here I am, oh, seek joy. You know, like, just look at the butterflies and everything will be fine. But I didn't mean that. And I knew that in the program, we were going to talk about it. And it turned out to be a good thing. But all of that to say that a lot of people who are living with pain, when they have all of that frustration, hopelessness, you hear them say things like, I'll get back to XYZ when my pain is gone, or once I've had the surgery, or once this is fixed. And life can become very small and contracted when you do that.
Yeah.
And what we've seen is that you can have pain and you can live a full life and you can experience joy and you can still go out and do certain things. And those two things can be true at the same time. And learning that is huge, because if you live with pain and you stop living, then all you're thinking about is the pain.
The pain, yeah.
But if you live with pain, but you're living a life that you enjoy, well, now the pain doesn't have as much importance. It's still very difficult, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't take such an important spot literally in your brain, in your thoughts.
So yeah, if all you're thinking about, that's what's going to happen, right? And that, exactly. I would imagine, it's got to be an incredibly hard space to get into, because you're so focused on the pain because it hurts so much.
Yep.
It's very tough. Lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And it's a fine balance, because part of getting through the pain, but it's being able to bring your awareness to it without getting attached to it, which is not easy. It's a skill that everyone can develop, but it is a skill. So it takes practice and repetition.
Now, as we mentioned off the top, you are trained in multiple areas and modalities. Can you speak a bit about these modalities and how you incorporate them into your work?
Yeah. So again, they're all highly complementary. So I used to actually have days where I treated manually on this day and I did Pilates or yoga on this day. And now it's more all blended together and I like it like that. So I like that it's a bit of a one-stop shop for people who come to see me. I like that I'm able to both give them the manual treatment. We work a lot on nervous system resiliency. And if they need postural cues or exercises to go home with, I can put all that together for them.
Right.
So to me, it's not like they're separate things. Each of those things informs what I know so that I have more tools to choose from with the person that's in front of me, basically.
What lights you up or inspires you the most about the work that you do?
Oh, so much. A lot. One of the things, you know, a lot of people, by the time they come to see me, they've been through a lot. Mm-hmm. And often they'll say, like, you're the last stop. For me. If this doesn't work, I'm done. Like, I just don't have it in me anymore. So often when people come to me, they really are not able to smile. There's like no joy emanating from them at all. And it's heart-wrenching. And it is so rewarding on the flip side when you see someone like that who started that way and they come in one day and they've got a spring in their step and they are smiling genuinely. And they come in and they tell me about this, whatever, this hobby they got back to, or they went back to work, or they went out socially and it was fun and they were able to enjoy themselves. Like that, how can you not keep coming back?
Yeah, you know? For sure.
And then I think the other two things is I really love a challenge and I like to be surprised. And the human body, again, it's so magnificently complex that it's always challenging. Every time I think I've seen it all, somebody comes in with something I've never heard of before. Or, you know, maybe I'll have found a combination of things that works for this particular issue. And then someone will come with that issue and those things don't work at all for them. So it keeps me on my toes. And because every person is different, literally from 1 hour to the next, my job changes, you know, so I'm never, ever bored.
That's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
Now, on the flip side of that, what is one of the most challenging parts of your job?
When I can't help somebody, when that chronic pain is not shifting, it's very hard not to take it on. I'm getting better at it, but I think about them constantly. I'm constantly searching, okay, what have I missed? What thing have I not learned about that might be able to help them, you know? But I need to get better at accepting that I just may not be the right person for them in this moment. So I do refer people out. When we get stuck like that, I do refer people out, but I'll always keep thinking about them.
Chronic pain, of course, also has a mental health component and implications. How does your pain education address the intersection of physical and mental health, fostering overall well-being?
So quite a bit, and we've talked about it a little bit already, but the pain education piece is important. I always find it fascinating that most of us know how to put gas in our car. We know how to clean our windows. We might even know how to change a tire, but we really don't know what to do when we have a new injury or we find ourselves with a chronic health or chronic pain issue. We really are at a loss. And to me, this is something that one day when I have more time, I think we need to get into the elementary schools and start teaching kids about their pain from day one so that when you get some point in your life and you have an injury or something, it's not a big deal because you've got all these tools already at your fingertips. Whereas what we do now is it's only usually once people are in a really tough situation that now they say, okay, let me try all these things. And that's wonderful.
Reactionary versus proactive.
Yeah, exactly. But it's hard to learn. When you live in pain, the frontal lobes are part of what is affected. And that's where our executive functioning comes from. So it's the right thing to do, but it's not the easiest time to learn a new skill.
Yeah.
So for those of you listening who are lucky enough that you're not living with pain, do some of these practices now, because then if you do find yourself in trouble down the line, you already know how to do these things. They're much easier to implement when you already know them. So that pain education piece works a lot on understanding how your body works, how your body and mind work together. Mm-hmm. And all of that goes a long way into reducing fear and anxiety, because one of our biggest fears as humans is the fear of the unknown. So if you don't understand how your own body works and why it feels the way that it does, that's really scary.
Yeah, for sure.
So we work a lot to try to reduce that fear.
What is one of your biggest failures, or we'll use the word life lessons or teachable moments, and what did you learn from it?
Again, many. But I would say if biggest failures is any time that I don't listen to my gut. And so something I do and something that I teach my patients to do is a soma scan or a soma check-in. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Brad.
No.
So, you know, whatever, if someone asks me to do something and I'm not sure if I want to say yes or no, if you just think about it, your emotions come into play, you don't want to hurt their feelings, or you feel an obligation. There's a lot that comes in, right? And instead, if you ask your body, you literally just get quiet in whatever position, you ask the question, you visualize saying yes, and then you check in. How did my breath react? How did my muscles react? How did my nervous system react? Okay, now I say no to that thing. I visualize doing that and I check in with those things again. And the answer is usually so clear. It gives you a yes or it gives you a no. And I've learned that if I listen to my somatic yes and my somatic no, I can't go wrong. But if
so
I
muscle testing,
it,
like muscle testing and things like that, similar?
No, actually not specifically. That's a little bit more kinetic testing. It's a little bit of a different principle. This is almost more trying to tune into your gut. Okay. That when we think of doing something, our nervous system will either perceive that something as enjoyable, comforting, safe, mm-hmm. in which case our breath will be calm and easy, our muscles will relax, and we'll feel kind of happy-go-lucky about it. If, on the other hand, I picture saying yes or no to something and it feels like, oof, it's not the right thing for me right now, my system will react like a stress response. Right. So my breath will get shallow and quick, my muscles will tense up, and I'll feel agitated.
But that takes a lot of practice to get to that point where you can lean into and trust your body and your intuition and your guidance.
So this is what I find so fascinating, Brad, because we are all born with that mm-hmm. intuition. And then sadly to me, we train it out of our children. You know, we mm-hmm. teach kids to, oh, you shouldn't cry about that. That's not a big deal. Suck it up or put a smile on, or you don't want to hug that person. Oh, you should go hug them, their family, or, you know, be still when you're at the dinner table, when you're in a place of worship, when you're out for, you know, all these things. And what we've mm-hmm. done is we've taught our children to ignore the messages that are coming from their bodies. So you're right. Because we've ignored these messages for so long, it can be very tough to tune back in. And because we were born with these gut instincts, they're there. It's not like we're developing a skill from nothing. We're just trying to reconnect with something that's always been there, but we just sort of learn to not pay attention to.
So we've been conditioned out of us.
We've been conditioned out of it. Exactly. So it's harder for some than it is for others, for sure. Mm-hmm. For some, it comes like this. For some, it takes months. But what I hope people hear is that it's in all of us. We all have that ability to tune into that gut feeling. We just have to remember that there are messages constantly coming from the body and learn how to hear what they're saying and trust them.
Tune into them. It's buried deep within us.
It is.
It's just a matter of excavating it and trusting and allowing that
exactly.
to come through.
Exactly. Allowing. That's a very good word for this. Allowing.
What do you think your unique skill set or superpower is that's helped you become successful?
This is going to sound cocky, but I don't mean it that way. I have this genuine thought that I can do absolutely anything I put my mind to, like whether it's something physical or intellectual. If I don't know how to do it, I can figure it out.
I love that. Now, speaking of success, how do you define that word? What does success mean to you?
To me, success is if you're doing something that you're proud of and that lights you up, that just makes you feel happy.
What is one common myth about your profession that you'd like to debunk?
So it's interesting. Osteopathy has actually been around since the early 1900s, but it's only become more mainstream, maybe in the last 20, maybe 30 years, I guess. And it's often thought of as kind of voodoo. And I think that's because it helps so many different things. Hmm. But it is truly a science-based profession. And the reason it helps so many different things is precisely because it takes this whole body, whole systems approach rather than only targeting symptoms. So I want people to know that it is a science-based profession that works with how the systems all interconnect and interact.
It's not voodoo, people.
It's not voodoo.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. Hey,
absolutely.
If that's what works for you.
If that's what works, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. What does the word empowerment mean to you, Colleen?
To me, when I think of empowerment, it's having the confidence to make a decision without the need for validation or confirmation from anybody else.
We're going to jump into a little rapid fire section here. So the next grouping of questions just be 2-3 forward answer type thing. Okay. If you're writing your autobiography, what would the title be?
Oh, join me on this wild ride.
How would you describe yourself in one word?
Genuine.
What is the one thing you want but cannot buy with money?
I would like to have my function back.
If you could change one thing in the world, what would that be?
I would love for people to be kind to each other.
That, you know what? This is one that just... It boggles my mind every time I think about it. Why can't we grasp the concept of being kind? It's so simple. Doesn't cost you a cent to be kind to someone.
It actually pays back. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like it feeds you. So
yes, yeah, it could be something as simple as a smile.
Absolutely.
I think we need, I've been talking with a friend of mine about this, and I think we need to create some kind of course on human kindness, being kind to others, being a kind human.
I'm in.
There's a lot of people that could learn. from that.
I think so. And we can just watch children sometimes, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. What is one thing you love about yourself that is not related to your physical appearance?
That I don't ever give up.
If you could be remembered for one thing, what would that be?
That I made some kind of difference, whether it's personal or professional, that I affected somebody's life in some positive way.
And that concludes our rapid fire section. Now back to our regularly scheduled program. I inserted a question, a surprise question for you. This is something new I'm trying out. So this is the, what did I call it? The $1 million question, we'll say. Ooh. I couldn't come up with a better name. So
can I get $1 million if I answer it right?
No. I wish I had that money
Very
to give away.
Misleading.
I've got to come up with a better name for it. It's just something I threw together last night at 1 a.m. So,
okay.
If you hosted a dinner party and had to invite one musician, one politician, one famous couple, and a family member, who would you invite?
Okay. Sorry. You're going to have to say one musician, B.B. King.
Okay. A politician.
Politician, Lincoln.
A famous couple.
Famous couple. I'm not really intrigued by famous couples. Oh, the Obamas.
And a family member.
A family member, my cousin Jer.
Perfect. Thank you. What is one lesson your career has taught you that you think everyone should learn at some point in their lives?
Well, it's kind of what we just talked about, that we each have within us such a wealth of resources, and we just need to learn to tune in and use them. Like, there's so much there. There's so much there that is so helpful. And we always think that we have to look outside ourselves for help. And look, that's great. That is my profession. You're coming to me because I'm outside of you and I'm helping you. Great. But I am so much happier when you don't need to come and see me.
Of course. Yeah,
so absolutely. I really want people to understand that there's so much more to these bodies than what we see on the outside. And you can learn to tap into this resource in so many different ways.
As I've heard so many people in the last couple of weeks refer to them as our meat suits.
I heard that interview. I thought that was great. We are much more than a meat suit.
Yes. If you could step into my shoes, what question would you have asked yourself that I didn't ask you?
You didn't ask me anything about nature and animals, both of which are a big influence on who I am.
Okay. Share a little bit about that.
Just that I grew up loving the outdoors. We used to go to a cottage up north and spent a whole day outside. And I was constantly finding stray animals. They would just end up in my path and constantly making friends with animals. And I think that's part of, you know, when you connect with animals, there is that kindness. They won't connect with you if you're not kind and if you're not open and if you're not grounded in your own energies. So nature and animals teach us a lot about how to do that tuning in of our own body, I think.
For sure. For me, dogs, that they are the epitome and the embodiment of unconditional love.
Ugh,
I don't think there's any other.
When we get home, right? Like there's nothing like it in the world.
You could be gone for 5 minutes and come back. It's like you've been gone for 3 days, right?
Exactly.
I think they are the only creature on this planet capable of complete, full, unconditional love.
Yeah.
100%. Humans, I don't think humans are capable of it.
I think
not total
capable.
Unconditional. That's
tough.
With no
tough.
Conditions whatsoever. I don't know.
That's a conversation for another day.
That's a whole other podcast episode. Who in your life has had the biggest impact on you and why?
I've had a lot of teachers and mentors who've been great influences, but I would say the one the most is probably my dad. He's probably the most real person. Like there's just no pretense. He doesn't speak just to be heard. He speaks when there's something to say. So when he speaks, you want to listen. And he carries himself always with honor. So he just makes me want to live a life that is respectful and honorable just because I know he's there and might see it. And I would never want to disappoint him. He's just a good example of how to be a good human.
There you go. That's it. And that's what it all comes down to, right? It's just being a good human.
Yeah.
It's a very simple concept. It really is.
It is. And he's the one who gave me my love of nature and animals, actually.
There you go. What challenge in your life would you say has shaped you the most?
Oh, for sure. That spinal cord compression issue that I'm still dealing with. It's an ongoing challenge. But it's weird to say, of course, I wish I didn't live with as much pain as I did. And of course, I wish I had all my function back. And I don't think I ever would have learned what I learned had it not been hard. You know, if I had recovered easily, I wouldn't have gone down this path that I went down. Mm-hmm. And it's given me the ability to be a lot more compassionate. Really, it's allowed judgment to fall away because now I really get that we never know what someone else is going through. And even though I already worked with people in pain, I, before this, movement came so easily to me. Even if I had to work at it, it was still easy. And even movements that hurt, it was that good kind of hurt. Do you know what I mean? So I only realized in hindsight that I didn't fully understand when people were really living with something chronic. I thought I got it, but until I was living it, I absolutely did not get it. So I really feel like it's made me a much better practitioner, that I can relate to what people are living with. And I think it gives them a sense of comfort knowing that I get it from a lived experience.
For sure. It makes it more relatable. You more relatable to them as well. I mean, it was part of your journey. It helped shape who you are, Colleen.
That's for sure.
You know, both my grandparents lived with and suffered with chronic pain. My grandfather, his back, he had to retire from work at 39 years old. And so he had back surgery. The surgeon left a bone chip in that grind. Yeah, it was terrible. And my grandmother, she had heart problems. She had burning mouth syndrome. She had chronic pain because they had to rip her chest open so quickly because they had to take her heart out and take it out of her body and massage it. And she had a quadruple bypass. So she lived with pain constantly. So seeing that, I was like, I don't know how the fuck you two do it. I really don't. It's insane. Yeah. And they went to doctors, all the doctors, all the appointments, all the specialists. No one could help them. No one.
I hear that. And I so wish that I had been able to get my hands on your grandmother to help her out. see if we could have helped her out somehow.
Yeah. If you had the opportunity to sit down and have a 1 hour conversation with one woman, any woman in the world, who would it be and why?
Harriet Tubman. I would like to even just be in her orbit, to have that kind of courage when everything in the world is against you. To have the courage to do what she did, I would just love to be around her.
If you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
Probably, I don't usually let it get in the way, but sometimes it did, to not let my shyness hold me back.
Lastly, Colleen, if you were to deliver your last 30-second speech to the world, your corner of the world, your tribe, your people, what would that last 30 seconds sound like? What words of wisdom would you impart?
Be kind to each other. You never know what someone's going through. Dare to be curious and explore, tune in, and whatever life puts in front of you, say yes.
Thank you so much for sharing, Colleen. Thank you for being here. Thank you for taking and making the time to share in your story and your journey with me and the beautiful light you put out into the world through all the amazing, helpful work you're doing. I appreciate you, and I'm grateful to have had this opportunity to sit down and speak with you. You're a truly inspirational human being. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Brad. I really appreciate the work that you're doing. And I feel very honored that you had me on. So thank you so much.
The honor and pleasure is all mine. So thank you. Once again, my name is Brad Walsh, host of your Empowerography podcast. Today, my guest has been Colleen Jorgensen. She is, we'll go through this long list again, a manual osteopath, an athletic therapist, pain care aware educator, and lead trainer. A therapeutic Pilates, yoga, and somatic teacher.
Nice job.
Thank you so much, Colleen. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.
Thank you so much. You too.
Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. If you haven't yet, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with all your friends. You can find me at viseuphoria.ca. Follow me on Instagram at Empowerography Podcast and on Facebook at Empowerography. Please join me next time for another inspirational story from yet another amazing woman.